Professor, I'm Mattia.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. How do you do?
Okay, how are you?
Thank you. Good, very well. Excuse me for my English. The first time I interview a foreign person on my phone, you know.
Right.
Well, let's start from the winter interview. I want to know some things about your books and your opinions about engineering education and other things, okay?
What kinds of things do you want to know?
Well, let's start with some books you have written on in the 90s. For example, Engine for Education, published in 1995. You talk about some natural forms of learning. Could you tell me about them?
Well, I think that the history of school is about how education and learning have nothing to do with each other. When we learn at any age and we're not in school, so when we're small children before we go to school, and when we're adults after we go to school, we would never think of sitting in a classroom and listening to a teacher talk and taking a test. It's just not how it works. If you want to learn to drive a car, you have to sit behind the wheel and drive the car. If you want to learn to do a job, you have to take the job and practice and get better. If you want to learn to walk, you try it out and fall down and somebody picks you up. If you want to learn to talk, you say words and your parents tell you they're saying them wrong or fix them or listen to them or help you. But all education in the history of mankind is really fundamentally a one-on-one process, which is that I'm trying to do something, I have a goal, and I seek help from my parents, from experts, whatever. Every time I fail, I fail. Every time I fall down, or every time I say something wrong, or every time I don't get what I want, I look for help. Now, am I describing something that looks like school? School doesn't do anything like that. And so as a result, school is trying to do something completely different. First off, because we live in democracies these days, we have the idea that everyone is entitled to an education. And that makes the numbers ridiculous. So you have one teacher and 30 kids, or in universities, sometimes one teacher and 500 kids. And so all you can do is talk at them. That doesn't work. It wouldn't work when you had 2 years of syntax of Italian. You wouldn't learn Italian that way. The sense that talking at people and sitting, making them sit quietly and do work and that's education is just wrong. It isn't. It's babysitting, mostly.
Maybe I'm suggesting some people could think that giving a mark or imposing an exam or test could be a way to train young people to do what awaits them in natural life. What can you answer?
But that isn't what awaits them in life. Well, you don't have multiple choice tests in real life. There's no such thing. Look, my experience in Italy is that you're not as swamped by my multiple choice tests as we are. But in the United States, everything is a multiple choice test, but not in real life, just in school. So getting good at SAT tests, which is how you get into Harvard and Yale, tells you nothing about what it's like to succeed even at Yale, much less in real life. So the idea that what you do in school is relevant for your life is not really true. Now, it turns out in the late 1900s, there was a philosophy spurred on by the Industrial Revolution, which said that the society needed factory workers. And so if you gave people stupid, mindless work and made them sit still all day, then they would be prepared to work in the factory and do the same, which is nice when you had factories, but factories in the United States anymore, I don't know how many they don't exist so much. And so the idea that we're training people for factory work by boring them to death, which was literally what the plan was, is still with us. Unfortunately, we don't have the factories.
So with this kind of new education, new way of teaching, you think we could have also a better society?
Well, sure. I mean, one of the problems we have, again, there was a time when I was up to date on Italian, the world of Italy, but I'm not now. So I just have to talk about the United States. All right? I mean, we elect one stupid president after another. Why? Because the people can't think. I mean, I don't know how much you've seen of this Sarah Palin character who could possibly be president, but she's a moron. How can you elect a moron president? Well, if you're a moron yourself, you wouldn't notice. And I'm not too impressed with Berlusconi either, so it's not that different in Italy. And I think that you have people campaigning in democracies on issues that aren't real issues. You're not having serious dialogue. You're having politicians say nonsense. No one catches them on it. And as a result, you live in a country which, or everyone lives in a country which is usually very badly governed. So let's just start with that.
Yes, yes. I agree with this, yes, of course. And so I think also here, and I don't know in the United States, but thinking and having people who think in school is one of the things that now are not considered so important. Instead, is one of the most important things, I think, too, yes.
Well, you know, they give lip service to that. I don't know if you know the expression lip service. It means I said it, but I didn't mean it. So they'll often say, oh, it's very important to teach critical thinking. In fact, you heard Obama on the campaign trail say that. Yes. Actually, quoted me. He said, you know, the most three most important things are reasoning, and communications, and human relations, which is something I've been saying for 20 years. He quoted me, but he didn't do it, did he? Instead, he put a guy in charge of education who wants even more testing and wants national standards. And this sense of national standards is just ludicrous. In fact, I used to go to Italy a lot. I haven't been there lately. But the last time I was there, I got into a fight with your minister of education. I don't know who he was because it was some time back. And he said to me, you know, we're the only country in Europe who still require Latin. And I said, so you are proud of being the most backward country in Europe? Why would you require a dead language? And you have to read the original, you know, Dante or whatever he wanted to read in Petronius, whatever he wanted to read in Latin. The sense of education has been hijacked by a number of things. One of the things it's hijacked by is scholars. The scholars at the universities who tend to dictate the education system, who did it literally in the United States, dictate the kinds of things that they study in universities. And in a research, it's nice to have certain research subjects, and I'm all for having researchers, but the little kids are not becoming researchers. On average, you're getting, you know, less than 1% of the population becoming researchers. But what we're actually doing is training everyone to be a researcher. So, like, there's no use for Latin unless, of course, you're going to plan to be researching on Latin literature. But here he was still teaching Latin. I don't know if you still do, but
yes. So we can connect to your what you think about things that are taught in school. You think a school without marks and tests, and a school where you can discover things, is a better school than school with marks. So you say there shouldn't be students constricted to know something if they have to try things during the rest of school.
I have a different model than a lot of other people. Other models. While I'm thinking about Italy, I remember when I used to go to Italy, and when they used to be there, I used to hold up the 1,000 lira note to Italian audiences, because you may remember that Maria Montessori's picture was on it. And I would say, isn't this very nice, but where are the Montessori schools in Italy? And one of the problems you have with this notion of discovery-based learning, which I actually don't agree with, is that it's all the way on the other side. It makes the assumption that, it makes the argument look silly. The argument on the one hand is the teachers know what's right. It's really not the teachers. The system, the school system knows what has to be taught. The teachers will teach it, and everyone will learn the same stuff. The other side of the argument is, no, we'll let children free to discover. Well, that doesn't work either. I don't buy that one at all. And parents are always the best model. Look at any good parent. A parent doesn't set the child free to discover. The parent helps the child discover. He takes the kid to the zoo so we can talk about animals. Maybe he takes him on a trip so he can talk about another place. Maybe he watches a movie with him and discusses what he saw in the movie. But he opens worlds to a child, but doesn't force the child to go into those worlds. So if you want to teach your child to play a sport and the child hates it, you give up. You don't make him play the sport. But if he likes it, then you teach him more. So the normal method of education has always existed, and I think has to exist in the schools someday if they ever figure it out, is not discovery learning, but lots of choices. So the kids have, okay, you can learn any of these range of different things. You'll always learn by doing. You'll practice. You'll try things out. When you don't like it, stop and learn something else. And the idea of marks and grades is ridiculous. No one gives you grades in life.
So it's a sort of learning together things in life.
Yes, but learning together with some purpose. In other words, I try to build curricula where people are trying to do something. And there are goals, and they're trying to accomplish them. And they know what the goals are, and they know what accomplishment looks like. You don't have to say to the kid, give the kid a bad grade. You can just say, well, look at your presentation compared to this other kid's presentation, or your writing compared to the other kid's, or your bridge that you built compared to the other kid's bridge. You know, you didn't do so well. You know, I don't need to give you a grade for you to know that. We know what we've succeeded in life.
You, as a teacher, you are as a guide more than a teacher, I think, no?
Well, yes, but I mean, unfortunately, you see, the way you said that implies that the word teacher has something, authority that I don't think it ever should have had. The teacher stands up as an expert and a judge. And a teacher is neither. A teacher is not an expert. I don't know what you teach, but you are not the world's expert in it, I'm sure. Okay, so you're not an expert.
Yes. No, it's very interesting what you're saying, and I think you are focusing some points that are very, very important in school, because teachers are judges here, and I think sometimes students have problems in school because they are valued too much.
Yes. I mean, that's the problem, is that teachers are always judges. It's always about pleasing the teacher. I used to teach, I just as an experiment, I always would walk into my school where I have to give grades, when I was teaching in the university, and I would say, okay, everybody gets an A, just to see what happened. Well, once I was out of the position of being the authority that they had to please, they behaved very differently. Now, some of them would just not show up, and then I'd say, well, okay, you actually have to show up. And then some of them would not hand in their papers, and I'd say, no, you have to hand in your papers. They said, well, you're not grading them. I said, yeah, but I'm looking at them. I want to see if they're good and talk to you about them. So they were always trying to get away with it. The student's model of the education system is, what do I have to do? What can I get away with to get a good grade? And I want to take the grade out of the equation. And I wanted to say to students, okay, the only thing you have to do is please yourself. You don't have to please me. I am not the person who needs to be pleased. But if you say something stupid, I will criticize it, because that's my role. My role is to help you think better.
Yes. And what's the role of the internet and the social network for this way of learning?
Well, the ultimate issue is this. Just like Maria Montessori, we had a great man, educator, at a similar time named John Dewey. I don't know if you know his name.
Yeah.
But John Dewey, in 1916, said a very interesting thing. He said, I've been telling everybody about the fact that you can't learn except by doing, and no one understands it. He says, I guess that's because I've been telling them you can't learn by being told. And of course, he was right. So he just decided, I'll build the school. So he did. He built a great school in Chicago, where he was a professor. And it was called the Laboratory School. And all the kids do is learn by doing, learn by doing, learn by doing. It was wonderful.
Yes.
Okay? That was 1920 or 30, okay? Today, that school exists. It's still there. Your Laboratory School of the University of Chicago. And what do you think it does? It does the same thing that every preparatory school in the United States does. It's a way to get into Harvard. It has no relationship Dewey tried to create. Why is that? Because he didn't have the internet. If John Dewey had had the internet, and John Dewey had been able to build that school and replicate it in every school across the world who wanted it, he would have been able to sell the model. But as one isolated voice of reason in the city of Chicago, no one cared. So the internet is the vehicle for change. That's the purpose of the internet. I can build a curriculum, which I have. I built a health sciences curriculum all day, every day, all year for kids about, say, 16 years old. And it's available on the internet. Any school in the world can have it. That doesn't mean they're rushing to take it, but it exists. And when I build enough of them, it'll be possible for somebody in Italy who doesn't want to go to the schools in Italy to go to school in this online school, which would be more interesting to him.
And it's not a problem for you that some things that one can learn could be lost, because you say a lot of times that what you learn is something that it must be important in your life, and something you can use also to do things. And what about things that are not useful?
Well, I mean, ultimately you learn nothing, you remember nothing that you don't practice. I mean, for example, why are we having this conversation in English? As you might have, you may remember, I'm not sure it was you, but the other guy was writing to me. I told him he could write in Italian. Why? Because
yeah.
I used to be able to speak Italian. That's why. All right. Now, I don't speak it anymore. Why? Because I haven't had the chance to speak it in 30 years. So, you know, if you spoke to me, I'd have to say it again, be slow, and then I'd have trouble remembering the words. The point is, I haven't practiced it. And the issue of everything is about practice. If you don't do something for a while, it's not going to come back to you right away. And the issue of learning anything that you're not going to continue to practice is therefore a waste of time. My favorite example of that is mathematics. We make everyone in the whole world learn the quadratic equation. Does anyone in the world know the quadratic equation except math teachers? No. Why? No one uses it. It has no use. But we make everyone learn it. And I can
so what's the
do this every time I give a speech. I guess. Go on.
Yes. Now, what's the function or these strange things that we don't use?
Well, I don't use anything in algebra, geometry, or trigonometry, do we?
I didn't understand. Sorry.
We teach algebra, geometry, trigonometry.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you use that in life?
I don't know. I don't use them, of course.
No, neither you nor anyone else.
Oh, someone could use them, of course.
No, they don't. See, that's the thing. We always say someone could use it. They don't. Really, they don't. I was a math major in college. I was a computer science professor all my life. I didn't use it. Are you there?
Now I am here. Yes. I couldn't hear you anymore.
What do I need to say?
Okay. You were saying?
I said, if we teach algebra, geometry, and trigonometry, you'll forget it because you never use it. You said, but some people use it, and I disagree. I don't think anyone uses it. I mean, 0.0001% of the population, maybe. Who cares?
Of course, yes. Yes, it's better to put the focus of teaching and learning about the things that are more useful, you think.
Well, yeah, the things that you use every day. For example, thinking, okay? What do we do every day? Thinking, all right? So here's something we do every day. We make a diagnosis every day. If you're not feeling well, you diagnose yourself of what's wrong. If you're hungry, you diagnose your own hunger. If your work isn't working out so well, you try to figure out why it isn't going so well. If your plans for your vacation aren't going so well, you try to diagnose what's wrong with the vacation. We do diagnosis on a regular basis. Why don't we teach people to do diagnosis in school? Not about any particular subject, but want to do have come up with good causal explanations for phenomena that break down and try to explain how to fix a business that's broken, or how to fix a political system that's broken, or how to fix a toy that's broken. I don't care. What the notion of fixing something on the basis of diagnosis is critical to thinking, but we don't teach it.
Yes, I think I agree with what you're saying. The only thing I'm thinking now is that it's not so easy to create a school where you can do these things. How can we do that?
You can't. I mean, you have a lot of very, very powerful forces stopping it. The first, of course, is the government. When the governments decided to get in charge of school, they forgot to bring along with them someone who was going to think out the problem. So they just did what schools have always done. And in fact, there's a quote from Petronius from 2,000 years ago, valid today, in which he says, he's criticizing the Roman schools, and he says, I think that the reason why our schools are produce such idiots is that they don't teach them anything of value in real life. And it's been accepted since at least then, and Plato is complaining about the same thing, it's been accepted for thousands of years that schools should teach the theory of things rather than the practice of things. And that's its fault. And unfortunately, the government reinforces that. In addition to that, you have big moneyed interests. Again, I don't know Italy as well as I know this country, of course. In this country, the textbook publishers are big and powerful, and they don't want to do anything to threaten textbook sales, and they also, of course, are intimately involved in testing, which is billions and billions of dollars a year industry, and they don't want to do anything to threaten that. They want to make more tests. And so you have very powerful lobbies affecting the government to say, no, we have to have tests and we have to have textbooks, and nobody to fight against it.
Yes, yes. I think it's the same problem in Italy.
It has to be.
Yes. One last thing about the Student Bill of Rights. Can you tell me what is it and what?
Oh, you're asking me something. You're asking me something I wrote 20 years ago. I don't remember the details. You can ask me if you read it to me and ask me a question. I'll do that. But I mean, I don't remember what I wrote last week, much less 20 years ago.
No, I wanted to know only the idea that was at the basic of the bill, not the single points of the.
Well, I think students should have a right to not be miserable. I mean, that's really my point. I came to understand through years of being a professor and through being a student myself and also from watching my children that school was a miserable experience for everybody. And there are always good teachers who sit there and try to work, make it better, but they don't have that much power. And there are always bad teachers who do anything they can to be nasty. There's also kids who are mean to each other. And then a tremendous workload that works make kids have to do homework. When they get home, instead of being with their families and playing, they have more school, they do homework. And there's a stress factor where kids are worried they're not doing well. And no one worries about not doing well in life, but they worry a lot about not doing well in school. If you're not doing well in life, you could ask yourself how you want to change. But you can't change. You have no control over school. So school, to me, is like a prison. In fact, they often look like prisons. You can hardly tell the difference. Because you're told what room you're going to sit in, what you're going to do, and you have to ask permission to get up and stop doing it. If you don't want to do it, you're in serious trouble. The only place that occurs besides that is prison. So my sense is that the Student Bill of Rights ought to be that a student is allowed to think for himself about things he wants to think about under the guidance of teachers who don't want to be the expert, but who want to help him do it, whatever he wants to do. If I want to learn to fix cars, there should be a teacher available to me who will help me how to do it when I get into trouble. And if that's what I want to do good, then I can be an auto mechanic. Or maybe if I'm really good at it, I can be a design engineer and design new kinds of cars. Or maybe I'll move from that and design airplanes. But let me do what I want to do. And don't make me do things I hate. That's the idea of the Bill of Rights.
Yes, of course. So now I'm thinking of what we can do in our little to help students. We can teach them to leave school in a different way or to appreciate also school, I think, no?
No, I think school is hopeless. The problem with school, you have to remember how much is in there that you don't control. I mean, I know you'd like me to say, as a teacher, it would be good to be able to talk about what teachers can do to improve the system. But teachers are such a small part of the system. For example, what can you do to make sure that the other kids aren't mean to the other kids, to each other? I mean, there's always some case where some kid is being mean to some other kid, where the kids are more worried about what the other kids think of them than teach. And so they have to wear the right clothes, and their father has to have the right kind of car, or they have to go out with the right boy or the right girl, and they have to play the right sport. There's so many things that have nothing to do with school that take place in school that make it an unfortunate experience. And then you have the system that no matter what you do, and I was had this problem too, which is that I tried to teach my kids in a radical way, but I still also wanted them to go to the best universities because that's the entree into success in this world. So I had to, and the universities have an idiotic requirement. So they didn't just take you because you're smart. They took you because you had good grades here and good this, that. And I used to say to my kids, okay, so grades are stupid and unimportant. And then they say, well, why do you yell at us if we don't get good grades? And I said, well, you have to get good grades. Okay, how stupid they are. You can't survive in the system if you don't. So even I, as a parent, the kind of parent I was, had to send a mixed message to my kids. And as a teacher, you're caught up in that. If you have to give grades, you're going to make some criteria, whatever criteria that is. You can think it out and try to be as fair as possible. But if you give a bad grade to a kid, it's going to hurt him. So there's a lot of stuff you can't control or do anything about.
It's not. This is quite a problem, I think. No, we have to. Maybe to discuss with the people who matters inside the country to try to get better situations. No,
if they care. The problem I've discovered about politicians is that they almost never care about education, in no matter what country I've ever talked to them. And I was quoting your minister of education in Italy, who was bragging that he teach Latin, who didn't understand a word I was saying. I didn't just ran into him one day. This was at a meeting. I was trying to explain these very things. He didn't care. Okay. And trust me, the Minister of Secretary of Education in the United States doesn't care either. In fact, he doesn't know anything about education. Politicians usually don't know anything about the subject. And so they don't even know who to – they listen to some professor somewhere. The professor has his own interests. So one way or another, they're being pushed around by money or by people with vested interests. And the politicians really, really realize that when they want to run for office, that the schools are never an issue. They like to talk about it. Education, nice word. But it doesn't matter. No one expects them to make education better. And you can't convince any politician to do it. That I have my standard remark on this is I run around the world giving speeches all the time about education. And quite often there are politicians on the – was in what I'm talking about. And I never even noticed a politician listening to me. In fact, most of them don't even stay around for my talk. They give their talk and they leave. They don't give a damn about it. The only politicians I have ever heard listen to me, talk to me afterwards – or in a country you would never imagine where that would be, Pakistan. In Pakistan, Musharraf listened to me. The Prime Minister listened to me. I've been there a number of occasions. You know why? Because in Pakistan, they got a real problem. They got a lot of seriously uneducated kids. But in Europe, where I spend a lot of time, in the United States, where I live, no, it's hopeless.
You are tracing a drawing a bad word, I think, and this is a very very big problem.
Well, my alternative is this. My suggestion is this, okay? I am, at this moment, trying to build the alternative. That's it. I think someone has to build the alternative. As much as I say things that politicians don't care, teachers do care, and parents do care. There's a lot of people on my side. I mean, and especially in Spanish-speaking countries, because I've become very popular in Spanish-speaking countries. There are a lot of people on my side. And what I'm just doing right now is I'm actually going to build the alternative, grade by grade, first grade, second grade, third, build it myself. And I'm looking for people who want to help, and then I'm looking for people who want to start these new kinds without the help of the government, because the government isn't going to help. And I think you just have to build the alternative. So that's my hope. I don't mean to be as depressing as I'm sounding. I just, you know, you're asking me, oh, who's going to help? And I think the only people who will help are perhaps private philanthropy, and also the people themselves, because the people are frustrated. And by the people, I don't mean the farmers. I mean the educated people are frustrated. So at some point, you have to tell them what they can do to help. I'm sorry?
For example, we have to go on so step by step to create a better school and a better life also to the people and the young people we meet in our life. This is the way we can do.
You know, what you can do, I mean, the best you can do, is to have the kids at your work feel they can confide in you and that you can be a mentor to them in things that may or may not have to do with what they're supposed to be doing in school. Yes. So if they become excited about something else, you allow as much as you can for them to think about that and work on that, and you talk to them about it. I had an interesting experience recently. I wrote to my past PhD students, many of whom are professors around the world, and I said, just tell me what you think the most important thing I ever taught you was. And almost every one of them wrote the same thing. I encouraged them. I made them feel good about themselves. I made them feel they could accomplish it. I made them think their thoughts were worth having, that they were intelligent. That's what you can do. You can do, and parents don't always do that for a kid. So you can do what a good parent would do, was to make the kid feel good about his own abilities. That's what you can do.
I think this is very important. And we have also sometimes to help parents to do this thing, to be a guide for them, you think is right this or not?
Yes, if the parents are the most important part of the puzzle, actually. The question is, what do parents know what's important? And I wrote a book called Coloring Outside the Lines. And that book was meant for parents to say, look, the schools aren't going to teach you the things that are important. Make sure you teach your kids what's important. Like, for example, being able to think hard about an interesting problem on his own is important. Being able to speak well is important. Being able to write well is important. And a parent can help a kid do that. I mean, perhaps by writing emails to him every day and having him write back. Or perhaps by putting him in situations where he has to get up and speak. Perhaps by giving him hard puzzles to work on that he's interested in, that encouraging him to do it. Or by doing things together with them. But I think one way or another, the issue is talking to the children constantly. There's a lot of parents don't understand that the most important thing they can do with their kids is talk to them, listen to them, talk to them.
They need to be listened to, I think. Also.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you for an interview, because it was very interesting. I had some questions about some various books that you've made and some other things, but we have talked about so much other things that were very interesting, I think. And when I talk to my teacher, he will be, of course, satisfied too.
Well, I hope you got the right questions that he wanted to ask.
Yes, of course. Yeah, the problem is that my teacher is not very good in English, and of course he is a fantastic person, and he has a lot of he makes a lot of things and likes to be with people, young people, and live for them. But the problem is that he is not very good in English, and so. So I will talk with him, and maybe we will see and think together again, because I very love to talk with you.
Okay, fine. Well, it was nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
What's the sense in sharing this one and only life? Ending up just another long